latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
To At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, just a little bit past the top of the hour. Hour three, day one, recapping Preakness weekend. Tons to do. We could probably do a recap show just recapping Calumet and the weekend that they had. And, of course, already referenced the Everfast placement for Dale Romans in the Preakness and Graham Motion's win. Earlier in the day, the one, they can say that Everfast's effort was surprising. It wasn't as surprising to me as Lexingtonian's win. The Chick Lang and Jack, I get the sense that you were a little surprised. Good morning and welcome, Jack Sisterson.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Steve.
It's my pleasure. That was a fun post race winner's circle, and you came down there, big smile, and talk about this horse, because he was easy to gloss over. I got to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, for probably 90% of the public, probably thought the same thing, and we thought he ran a much better race. Visually, then actually on paper, if you go back and watch the replay, Joel, he broke from the outside, used him a little bit early, and he jumped off and said, Jeff, I'm riding back, which I do want to ride him back. He said, break and take back. So I give a lot of credit to Joel, because he was the one that said, hey, next time we'll sort of take back. And as he sort of heard the post race comments, lives there, who, you know, we talk together. At the end of the day, I'm never going to get in the way of a jockey because I'm not a jockey. And those guys are probably looking at me thinking, who's this guy trying to tell me what to do? And I said, Jose, you know, if you break, you'd be a superstar if you can take him back and get him to relax. And sure enough, he did that.
They went fast, too. And, it wasn't like he was way, way back. I mean, and certainly took advantage of, you know, of the inside and saved all the ground. I mean, when you draw the one going three quarters, you don't want to lose that positional advantage if you're going to try to rally. And you know, Jose Ortiz is so good in the race flow. He must have felt, I didn't hear any comments from him afterward, Jack, but he must have felt like he had plenty of horse. And, you know, when they went 44-4 for the half, you thought, somebody's going to win this from off the base.
And, you know, Jose jumped off from me and said, Jack, I broke so sharp I could have went on with it. But we talked before the race to take him back. We had a feeling, Steve, that he might have broke a little sharper because this horse earned the right to run. We usually, you know, breeze him back after a run between 10 to 2 weeks after, and it was coming up the two-week mark to breeze him. And he was showing so much energy and life coming out of the allowance race at Churchill. So, God, we're going to have to put some anchors on him come this weekend at Keenan, come to breeze him. And I just thought, you know, let me touch base with the farm quick. They might think I'm a bit crazy, but would they be against me running him back in 2 weeks? Just how well he came out of the race. And well, it's great, and all credit to Cardin that they, as long as the horse is doing fine and you put the horse's best interest first, you can do, you know, whatever you'd like. And, you know, sure enough, if the horse is doing well, let's run him. And you've probably seen he's entered actually today. We actually scratched it. Well,
yeah.
they actually called me and said, you guys, going to scratch it, you're going to run. I said, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to run back in 2 days. 2 weeks maybe, but not 2 days. but no, I really give credit to Lexitonian himself, because if a horse could talk, he actually told us he wanted to run back in 2 weeks, and he showed a lot of energy coming out, and that's why I said to Jose, you'd be a superstar if you were able to get him to relax, because of how much energy he showed going into the race.
And you obviously, you didn't need to do anything with him, you know, much like the horses that run from Derby to Preakness. And you know, there are some other, you know, two-week turnarounds that spin right in and participate. But he actually, and I do notice it, you know, I'm looking more closely now than I did when I handicapped, frankly, that near bullet, that gate move, 47-1 before the allowance try on Derby Day. That might have been sort of the flair to take note of that you know he was coming around. And let's be honest, it was second off the layoff that you know hadn't been seen since October of last year. So you know he had every right to you know to move forward off of that seasonal debut you know that came you know on Derby weekend.
You know, all credit to the guys we have working here at the barn, from the hot walkers to the grooms, the exercise riders, everybody plays a huge part in this. And Antonio Castan breathed the horse out the gate. And, you know, we'd never be too hard on him, he, Steve. And we always think, you know, they'd improve with each run, which he did. But you typically wouldn't breathe one at work before they run. But I just thought, you know, coming off a long layoff, let's just jump him out the gate and have his mind focused on running next weekend, because I'm sure it's not going to be an easy allowance race at Churchill Derby there. So I wanted to give him a sharp enough work to get his mind focused on running, and which he did that well within himself. And I'm sure if we would have asked him to run, he could have went 45 out the gate. He did it to where, well, he might run a respectable race in the allowance. And sure enough, he did. And like I said, we didn't have to do much with him within the 2 weeks. And he really told us he wanted to run back within that time period, and I'm pleased we did.
Well, and it puts you in this spot. One of the other parts of this that is notable, too, you went 7/8 in that spot at Churchill, and this was a trim back to three quarters, and it feels like that really, you know, there's the nuance of sprinters we talk about so often. There's sprinters that, you know, that are really horses meant to go longer. So 7/8 or one turn mile is their sprint distance. And then there's horses that really don't want to go much past 3/4. And it might be that this is his perfect sprint trip.
Yeah, no, it's one, you know, that was the only race in the book that was coming up. So we thought, oh, you know, 7/8 might be a tough race off a layoff. And, you know, you'll see the guy 7/8 first time out, the sort of sprinting the whole way. And the one positive there, Steve, is, you know, he got a lot out of that race. You know, he got a good blow and one that, you know, stepped him forward in the right direction. And his number didn't come back, you know, too, you know, disgraceful. And he's like, you know what? You know, if he can move forward again, we might be okay for the rest of the year, which he did. And he's an easy horse to be around. And although he can be an energetic type, so you just got to be on your toes a bit with him. And I'm sure that pony doesn't like him when he's bouncing around all over me at Keeneland every morning, but that's what ponies are for, aren't they? So, but all credit to the horse. He came out the race great. He really, like I said, keep harping on, but it was him that told us he was ready to run back.
Well, and this is a huge, meaningful win for Calumet, as is the one with English B that Graham Motion sent out in the Murphy. But this one on the main track, Lexingtonian's a Spitestown, and he's out of a Tappet mare that didn't do anything, Riviera Romper. However, she's the sister of Swap Flipperoo, who Alan Jerkin fans will certainly jump up when they hear her name. And so this suddenly is a family that bears some watching. And being a son of Spitestown, this is a very impactful win for Calumet.
Oh, it was great. You know, this didn't come from me, but you hear the name Jerkin, so we may have to pencil in that grade one race at Saratoga for him and tried to add some more to the resume there. But, it's great. You know, we don't want to be in any rush running him back because, like I said, we did come back in 2 weeks. And I think he deserves a little, you know, easy 2 weeks after that. And it's great being here at Keeneland with the facility we have that we're able to turn him out. And but, you know, we might sort of make it a summer goal for that grade one Saratoga race for him and see if we can sort of add to that family of his.
Well, Lexingtonian with the win in the Chick Lang, and you know we should back up a little bit. You know, Todd had him originally. Talk about the arrangements that brought him to you.
You know, it was when I was at Fairgrounds for the winter, and I rarely, you know, I'm fortunate for any horse I've sent to me. You know, I have my fun trips to Belterra. I mean, I have as much fun going to Belterra as I do it. Strange, you know, going to Pimlico and just whether it's the allowance race there or maiden race, and sure enough, I got popped up with this horse, and Joel Fernandez did a great job training him at the farm, and he was sent to Joel from clubs in great shape, and they said, oh, do you have an extra soul at the barn? We're going to send a horse called Lexingtonian over, and, you know, they gave me the rundown if he's had some time off, and do you mind just getting him back going here? And sure enough, it popped up, you know, sort of May the 4th, and he was ready to run, and I was fortunate enough to be able to run him myself. And but my first job was with Todd, so I was hot walking years ago for him. And so if I can ever repay any sort of favor for that, I owe my turn. So I'm pleased and honored to have the horse.
Now, it's a nice win for you, and obviously, you're having another good season, building off of last year's success and adding another graded stake, you know, to the resume, Jack. Always positive. Oxy Lady, of course, from the Tempted last year, and you regrouped successfully with her, actually, earlier in the year by bringing her back to New York. What's going on with Oxy Lady?
You know, like I said, it was one, especially, yeah, that two turning three, and you've got that dream of the Oaks with her and things like that, so you sort of pick and choose your spot. She travelled to so many different tracks around the country, and she ran a disappointing race at Oaklawn, and fought you up the farm, you know, we got together and said, you know, maybe time for a little break for an hour. That, and like I said, those guys put the horses first, and yeah, she's back. She's here at the barn in Keenan, but we just backed off for a touch, and she's happy as can be. And we'll point for sort of a summer race for her to get her back on again and look for a strong fall campaign with her.
Well, and make sure you keep checking the condition books at Aqueduct, because clearly some people say they don't like going. Well, they're going to Aqueduct. She does.
Yeah, if Andrew, the stakes coordinator, is listening, make sure you write some 1 10-mile races for us up there that will come all the time.
I love it. You know who else I want to ask you about? Because I was very interested in playing Coach Whip, and then you scratched. What happened there?
We went to Pimlico this past weekend thinking, you know, odds-wise, you probably think, oh, Jack's been crazy sending those horses there. But we were slightly confident, you know, sending both of them up there. And unfortunately, Coach Whip didn't ship too well. You know, she spiked a little temp and she didn't eat up, and you know, we had to do what's right by the horse, and unfortunately she had to scratch her. And you know, she's back here with Keenan again. She's happy outside in the paddock now, and but we were looking forward to a big run from her. I'm not sure we could have beat the winner there, because she beat us at Keenan here in the Bewitched, but I thought we could have added a little bit more black type to her this past weekend. But she'll live to fight another day, and you know, we'll keep her, you know, a close eye on as we move forward. But she shipped back fine. She's happy outside in the paddock. So, unfortunately, and it's going to happen, isn't it? They're not machines.
Sure.
And she told us she wasn't right to run, so we respected that.
Is she a fretful shipper? I mean, has that been an issue with her before, or that just circumstance?
To be honest, Steve, I'd be lying to you if I said yes, she is, because every time we've ran her, it's sort of, we've run her at Keenan, we've shipped an hour to Churchill. She spent the winter at Fairgrounds, and we shipped her well before she ran down there. So we've really never had to put her on a van for longer than an hour. So I'll make a little mental notice, you know, she didn't ship too well to Pimlico. So moving forward, looking at the condition, but we'll keep that in the back of our mind.
What's going on with Bandua?
Oh, he's a barn superstar. We love that. He's like a pony around there. It's like, not a pony to me. He likes to bite me. He won't bite anybody else. So he actually, as you know, he ran a disappointing race in the Westchester at Belmont. And, you know, we wanted to, you know, he hit the sloppy ground, but he hit after the race making an excuse. And I tried to say to that anywhere possible that, you know, I've never done a good job to get him prepared for basically an extended sprint race there. And, you know, we've discussed options moving forward that, you know, he's ran well at Arlington, third and secretary last year. He's obviously got to step up to prove his way to the Arlington Million. There's a prep July 13th, I believe, there. We've got the option of going out to Delmar for Delmar Handicap. I think a horse that John Sadler has, Platinum Warrior, should be one of the favourites out there, and he's competed against that horse several times. And if we can get fortunate enough to possibly have sort of an allowance race penciled in opening weekend at Del Mar as a prep for the Del Mar Handicap, because he's still eligible for two other men. There's that option. And then there's the option of leaving him on the dirt, because he didn't run a bad race in New Orleans Handicap. The good thing, if anything, is you've got several options there, and we'll keep all of those options open as we move forward. But he's doing great. He'll have his first three back this weekend. And he'll tell us when he's ready to run again.
Well, it's great to get you on again, Jack Sisterson. Congratulations, Lexingtonian, the Chick Lang, and long-term summer goal. Looking ahead toward Saratoga and every three-year-old sprinter's target, the grade one, got to look forward to an opportunity like the Jerkins. And Jack, it was fun to be there and watch everybody, you know, your friends and the people that you've worked with, everybody rushing to congratulate you. Well done, and congratulations to Calumet.
Thanks a lot, Steve, and thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Jack Sisterson, everybody. And, of course, Jack, most thought of most recently before he went out on his own with Doug O'Neill. And look at him, second year, and he's got three, four stake horses between making this one a major, you know, this is a big, important, you know, you win this Chick Lang. This is a good stripe to have for a sprinter, and he can build on that. But then Oxy Lady and Bandua and that Coach Whip, keep an eye on her. I was absolutely using her prominently. You know, the Icky Masho obviously is on a roll for Atfield. We got to get Roger tomorrow, who's always fun and who always teaches us stuff. I mean, Atfield over the years, invaluable. His expertise. This was always happy to reach out to Jack. I mean, he's very quietly, you know, from that sort of Ben Colebrook school of quiet assassins. And you know, he's operating, he's running horses where they can win. He's got the Calumet. He's kind of the, I guess, I don't know, what would you call him? Maybe the B, kind of the B level outlet for Calumet, and he's making the most of the opportunities. Does a good job. My friend Joe Bianca does a great job, and TDN, and he was on hand all week at most of the week at Pimlico, and happy to get Joe in. Didn't get a chance to talk Preakness, so we're going to do some recapping. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's it going?
Good, good. Day one, you know, we got the highlights. We got George Weaver in for Black Eyed Susan, and got Cassie and the fascinating Odyssey. Even without the Derby carrying on, the Cassie story was terrific anyway. I mean, coming back post Louisiana Derby, and even getting him to the Kentucky Derby, and then for Cassie, kind of exercising those ghosts from Classic Empire 2 years ago, and the big win. So a lot of fun. We just talked to Jack Sisterson. Give us your impressions, Joe. What'd you think?
I mean, I thought it was a great weekend of racing. I mean, the War of Will result, I feel like the story kind of told itself after all the hubbub of the past 2 weeks for him to basically get the same trip he got in the Derby, but get through and get that kind of redemptive victory. I thought on the undercards there was a lot of good action, too. Catholic Boy coming back a winner despite that wide post. Thought he was impressive, showing his will to win once again. Obviously, Covfefe, that ridiculous run in the Miss Preakness, shattering the old track record. And also, you know, just the weather helped, but there was a huge crowd on hand Saturday. They had record handle. And I think if you told a lot of people 2 weeks ago that, listen, the first four runners across the wire in the Derby aren't going to show up in the Preakness, and you're going to get record handle and 130,000 people to show up on Preakness Day, I mean, I haven't seen what the TV ratings are, but it just seems like a big net positive for racing, considering the lack of star power going into the race, how well they did this weekend at Pimlico.
Point well made. And the other, and this came up with Mark Cassie, interestingly, because the loose horse, the maiden Bodie Express, popping like a cork. And it's unbelievable that we now, you know, follow up the Derby hubbub with a different, you know, a different incident that all of us in racing that play the game regularly and are involved in, we all see it and we all know what happens. But the general public, Joe, they're fascinated by a loose horse. And I mean, we're happy to say, yeah, that happens. You know, if you watch regularly, if you start betting, you know, that'll happen to you. You won't get a refund for a non-starter.
Don't tell them that part.
let them find that out on their own.
But yeah, I mean, also, you know, that just between us, like, that could have gone worse. You know, he came back and he was galloping towards the horses that were coming back, so thankfully the outriders were able to corral him. But yeah, I always think of that, too, when people talk about, you know, how racehorses are being forced to do something they don't want to do. And it's like 99% of the time, part of it is training, but 99% of the time when they dump the jockey, what do? They run, they race, they follow, they go with the other horses. So I think that was a very, actually, because nobody got hurt and because everyone was safe, it was a cool viral moment that kind of added to the allure of the Preakness. And, you know, the, in the world of social media, it's, you kind of need those little touchstone things that people who are more casual fans or casual viewers can latch onto. And I think, yeah, it's a good point that that's something that we're pretty used to, but most people who just tune in for the Triple Crown don't usually see.
Well, and you know, you you did a tremendous job on one of the local city network outlets after Derby, explaining and summarizing and, you know, providing, you know, very acute reaction to the Derby incident. And when it comes to figuring out what this means, Joe, and I haven't even broached this morning. I mean, early on in the show, I said, I really don't want to, you know, get into the what ifs, and, you know, people are going to, you know, if War of Will turns around in 3 weeks and wins Belmont, you know, you're going to have the, you're going to have the same moment you had. I guess maybe the closest I could akin it to would be Little Currents, Triple Crown, you know, that wasn't, when he had to face, you know, when there was the field of 23 in 1974. And he had just too much traffic to deal with to win the Derby, so he had to settle, you know, with his big efforts in the Preakness and in the Derby. But, you know, people are going to go crazy if War of Will wins the Derby. I mean, what do you take? How do you digest the Derby incident vis-a-vis War of Will and whether he could have been a dual classic winner as of Saturday night?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say because, you know, he obviously had that big trouble in the Derby, but he ended up finishing eighth. So, in general, it's hard to say a horse that finished eighth would have won the race. But he did battle the deep stretch, and, you know, you've seen other horses sustain less trouble than that and go on to win. But he kind of reminds me of a Fleet Alex a little bit in that way, because a Fleet Alex was pretty fancied in the Derby and kind of had that little inside trip, got through late and finished third, and then came back and obviously had that miraculous win in the Preakness and really kind of, you know, gave a little juice to that Belmont when he came through. Obviously, we had the Derby winner, too, in Giacomo that year, and we probably won't have that this year. But, you know, one thing that I take away from this, you know, as a racing fan and also as a bettor, really, just to have 13 horses in the Preakness, there was just there was so much to dig into and so many stories that had converged on this. And it's kind of one of the benefits of, you know, maybe a horse like Maximum Security or Country House passing on the Preakness and the Belmont is, I, you know, War of Will was impressive, but he wasn't that impressive that I think he's going to scare people away from the Belmont. And I figure we're going to have another big field for the Belmont. The three-year-old division is going to be pretty murky going forward. And I just think it sets up, when you don't have that superstar three-year-old at this point, I think it sets up a lot of really good racing and a lot of really good three-year-old stakes the rest of the year, you know, from a betting standpoint, but also from an intrigue standpoint when it comes to trying to figure out who's going to win the Eclipse. You know, obviously someone could emerge and then, you know, sweep the second half of the year like Arrogate did a couple of years ago. But as of this moment, it seems I would want to tune in for the Belmont to see the next chapter. And, you know, good on Mark Cassie for running his horse and, you know, planning on running him again, because, you know, as far as I know, Maximum Security is not sick or injured. Like, there was really nothing stopping him from running in the Preakness. And it kind of put a cap, I think, on all the Derby nonsense that really came about in the last few weeks. That, you know, this horse that had this bad trip in the Derby, the connections dusted themselves off, came back to the Preakness, got him there early. He looked great all week, and he got the job done. It's just, I don't know, it seemed like kind of the capper on the 2 weeks coming from the Derby. And, you know, for what it's worth, I think that the Derby disqualification and all that stuff, as much as it got to wear on me the last 2 weeks with all the back and forth in the media, I think it did put more of a spotlight on racing in a positive way, you know, and it did give us as media members a chance to tell the story and to kind of explain what happened in, you know, stuff that we see really in a day-to-day racing life. And I think that those opportunities are rare, you know, to explain to the casual fan, you know, the intricacies of the sport beyond just the 2 minutes or whatever the race takes up.
Absolutely. And you know, the old maxim, if you don't have a personal interest, you root for the best story. And and in the aftermath here, this was the best story. There were nice stories. You know, certainly, you know, you wrote about Marshall Graham and the 10 strike team, and they, you know, they were a nice story, undoubtedly. And you know, Dale gets another big placement at a big price in a classic. That's a nice story and all that. You know, but Baffert winning wouldn't have been the best story. It would have been a story because it would have been would have broken the record tie that he's got for Preakness wins, etc. But the Maryland bred would certainly have been a great story, and Kelly Rubley. But this one, this one, all the tides and confluences were there.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, I think it kind of put a cherry on top of all the Derby stuff. And you know, when I was there late on Saturday night writing the story, and it kind of told itself. You know, you could see it on the faces of Mark Cassie and Tyler Gaffleone afterwards that it had to be a very satisfying win. And you know, we have our rooting interests, but we try to separate ourselves from that. But I just think that War of Will, especially getting the same trip, like I said, you know, the mirror image basically of the Derby, except he got through this time. I think it was pretty poetic, and I think you're right that this was the most satisfying and fulfilling story to come out that could have possibly come out of the Preakness. And I think it's made better, like I said, by the fact that, you know, Cassie's going to the Belmont as long as the horse acts well, and there's more to be written about him. But yeah, I think there were a lot of unanswered questions leaving Churchill Downs a few weeks ago, and a lot that was up in the air and a lot to be debated and bandied about. But I think that the Preakness kind of closed the door on that in a positive way.
Well, and you mentioned going on to Belmont in 3 weeks, a very quick snapshot. We got tons of time for this, but, you know, beside War of Will, Cassie also expected to run Sir Winston. Pletcher has thrown Spinoff into the mix, as well as Intrepid Heart, who had always been intended. And, of course, we got the Japanese horse, Master Fencer. Mott with a work the other day with Tacitus as he prepares. Dale Roman said he would probably run back with Everfast, as did Cox with Owendale. Baffert has said that game winner is likely Danny Gargan, considering Tax as a Belmont potential starter. And I haven't seen Global Campaign this past week on as many lists, but Stanley Huff, I'm sure, will keep it as a possibility, along with the Dwyer and the Ohio Derby. So right now, that's your working list for the Belmont Stakes, and War of Will's presence will certainly at least bring the Belmont up to the same level of interest as the Metropolitan's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, the old undercard Metropolitan handicap. Yeah,
yeah. I don't not this Belmont day. The Met the Met is going to have equal billing for Belmont Stakes Day. Yeah, looking at this chart, Joe, you know, there's certainly some real lessons for fledgling handicappers too, and what they can take away. And when you see a chart where the second place finisher was 11th after a quarter and a half, the third place finisher was 9th after a quarter and a half, the fifth place finisher was 12th, and technically last because the loose horse. They are, when you have three of the top five, you know, in that super high five, which wasn't hit, by the way. It carried to the 14th race, which is a story we should visit. Marshall, did you see Marshall Graham's tweet, by the way?
No.
Marshall said, instead of taking pictures of Mark Cassie and Tyler Gaffleone and War of Will, I should have been handicapping the 14th because there was a positive return. There was a positive expectation return on the $400,000 carryover. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty funny.
Nobody noticed that, really.
No, you had to be. You had to be. Boy, I mean, and see that's one of those moments when you say, "I wish I was sitting home at my
right
in the living room or my desk, because I wouldn't have been captivated by the, the bright lights in the sky."
Same thing earlier that day. Actually, there was a Belmont Pick 5 that paid like $15,000, and I went back and looked at the past performance, and I was like, "Damn, I probably would have had this," but I was there, and I was at the Preakness. I didn't want to feel like a degenerate running for the simulcast booth.
Well, this chart shows you, War of Will sitting behind the speed, and Warriors Charge with a absolutely amazing effort to, only be beaten three when everybody else who attended the pace, Market King, Always Mining, and Another Twist of Fate, who were second, third, and fifth after a half mile, they ended up 10th, 11th, and 12th.
That's the key thing, too. Even when you're handicapping, I like to look at charts because of that dynamic that you're talking about, to see where horses were early and where they ended up, whether the race got turned upside down or not. And you're right. Warriors Charge, that was a big effort. It was kind of hidden in the race's aftermath, understandably. But for him to set those fractions and to hang in there and only be beaten a couple lengths, that was a big effort. And, War of Will, even though he got that kind of perfect drafting trip at the rail and snuck through, he was pretty close to a fast pace. So, it shouldn't be looked at as, a tripped out win for him. He kind of, he made his own trip in that way, that he was able to run that close to that quick pace.
Well, the other elements of the week and the weekend, Joe, we got about 5 minutes to wrap. Give us some of the overall themes. To experience Preakness this way, you experienced that in a very different way during the years of the slave barque. Talk about the week in Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because this was my third time in Baltimore. Last time wasn't during Preakness week, and the time before that was when I was working the infield with you guys. And I was 19 at that time, so I was too young to really go out and enjoy the town. And this was my first time really getting to experience Preakness week as a grown adult. And it was one thing that struck me is that everybody knows about it. You go out to these bars and restaurants, and everybody's talking about the Preakness. Everybody's talking about the city and what the events they're putting on and all that stuff. And it kind of struck me, because I think Louisville is that way too, obviously, with
sure
the Derby. But Louisville is a smaller city than Baltimore, whereas I compare it more to New York. And as much as I love the Belmont, even when there's a Triple Crown on the line, most people really couldn't care less in New York that the Belmont is there that week. So that really struck me, that how much it means to Baltimore to have that Preakness. There was there's so few people I think that you could stop and talk to and talk about the Preakness, and they'd be like, "What is that?" And I that really made an impact on me, how much it means just to the regular people of Baltimore to have that event. And it really struck me, and it really tied in with your remarks at the Alibi Breakfast, which I thought were great. And you had a platform, and you used it, I think, in a real productive way. And I was glad that you said those things. And it was only really confirmed by my experience in Preakness week. And it just seems like it would be a big loss to that community. Forget all the economic impact, just in terms of morale, to lose that kind of big event when it's pretty clear that they take a lot of pride in hosting the Preakness. And that was something that I hadn't really known before I went down last week. And it was good to see. It was good to see, a community rally around a racing event like that.
Well, the town, and this came up last week in a couple of different visits. In fact, when I had Marcus Pollock on from Park Heights Renaissance, and the Colts came up, and the devastation, the you want to rip the heart out of a community, that was the one that people, I think people in the rest of the country didn't understand. And of course the Browns, the very similar to the Browns scenario as well. But I think there's so many right reasons to make special effort to you know, to keep it there. And I have not wavered. I mean, having documented mostly with visits from George Ann Hale over the years, when things were really uncertain in Maryland, when, you know, there was not, they were losing stallions and things were falling apart on the breeding side, and it was, you know, the purses, you know, kept losing grades to their stakes, and it was a disaster. And the stipend that came from the, you know, from the gaming stabilized things and got it, you know, back momentum back in the right direction. But the same kind of effort to me is necessary to, you know, to build a new Pimlico, and it would mean a lot to the community, and it could be used as a flashpoint for momentum for the town. And I've seen some terrible, just awful things written by people who probably have, you know, really don't know and have never really made an effort to get to know. So I appreciate you saying those things, Joe, and widening that widening that message. It was fun to spend time that way with you, and we're gonna get some Belmont in.
I'm not working there, but I'll be there as a fan, and I'm happy to catch up with you if Tina's not dragging you around too much.
Well, we can get you to some Siaka activities as well.
Put you into the
mix. But great job, and with lots, you know, you got a good feel for, you know, for interesting offbeat stories, and you can follow Joe on Twitter, of course, along with the other TDN team, and of course the sale starting at Timonium this morning, and we'll probably reach maybe tomorrow or Wednesday. We'll get a hold of Jessica Martini. But follow Jay Bianca, TDN, is Joe's. Are you still maintaining the other Twitter account?
Rather not talk about it. It's a little political these days.
All right. So we'll keep it on this. Get to know Joe on his TDN account, and then he'll introduce you slowly to Radical Joe.
Very slowly.
He does a tremendous job, and one of the bright lights in racing media, Joe Bianca. Joe, thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me, man. See you soon.
Not at all. Brad Cox is standing by, and Brad was traveling earlier this morning, and he's clearly gotten to wherever he was going. I don't know if that means back to the Ville. Where are you? Brad.
Good morning, Steve.
How you doing? Where were you
I'm
headed?
Are you
home in Louisville?
I am. I'm at the barn.
Look at you.
I'm at the barn. I'm at Churchill Downs.
All right. I wasn't sure. It's funny. There's been many years where we get to this Monday, Tuesday, and everybody's at Timonium. And it seems like even though there was, you know, the Breed Show was, they were well attended, a lot of horsemen had other things to do, and they've got, you know, they've got their seconds and thirds taking care of it.
Yeah, that's kind of what we do. We've, you know, got some agents working for us, or we're working with some agents, I guess I should say, and just going to kind of leave it in their hands and get back to home, and, you know, we have plenty of babies here to look after, and I need to be at Keeneland tomorrow morning, so that's where I'll be.
Well, meantime, you were in the right place at the right time with the group of horses you brought to Baltimore, and we could tell you had a loaded wagon coming in, and it certainly paid off. And I haven't seen confirmation, but you did win this trainer bonus, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I did receive a text yesterday that we won it, and it was I honestly didn't think of anything about it until Saturday morning. We had so much going on Friday with having four runners there at Pimlico, and then Saturday morning just kind of hang around the barn. We had walked all the horses, the two runners for the Preakness, and I was thinking, well, we have to be in contention for this thing. So I started doing some math, and, you know, obviously watching Steve and what all he had going on that day is very active, and He had a big day as well, big weekend as well. So it was a fun. It was just kind of like trying to win a trainer's title after, you know, a meet you had been racing at for a few months. You start watching the guys in contention and what they're doing, and it's becomes a little nerve-wracking, I guess you could say.
Well, the third and the fourth in the Preakness had to put it away, even with New York Central winning the Maryland Sprint for Steve, because on Friday you had established a real strong position with the pair of wins and the second with Ulele, who ran very well in the Black Eyed Susan. We talked to George Weaver earlier, and Ulele, I mean, absolutely fought to the wire, but forget all of that and forget the Preakness and everything else. The horse that as many people are talking about, they might be, I guess War Will gets the big spotlight, but Brad, the performance of Covfefe, it was the thing. I've never seen a building so agog at a performance. It was unbelievable, and you seemed as stunned by how big of a performance it was as anybody was.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was it was jaw dropping to say the least. And she's, you know, we know she's a not very very nice filly. You don't break your maiden and put a horse on a plane 3 weeks later and run them in a grade one like we did in the Frazetta if they're not doing well, and think a lot of them. We've always thought she's a grade one horse. I've told Alex Elise, which he and Jason Lipp bought her, I said, this is a really, really good filly from the get-go. And she's nice. I mean, she's very, very fast. And, you know, I always thought being out of an unbridled mare that, you know, she could, you know, stretch a little bit. You know, I don't know how far, but, you know, and I don't really think two turns, but I don't think she's limited to three quarters. It didn't look like she was on Friday either. But she's an extremely talented filly and does everything with ease. And I think that was the scary thing, is just how easy she did win the race. I mean, probably never even turned a stick over or even tap her on the shoulder for down the lane at all. So it was very impressive.
Did you have – how quickly did you realize – how quickly did you look up and see the 107 – 0.7.
When I got out to the track, I saw it on the big board in the infield, and I asked someone, I said, is that a track record? And they said, yes. And I was thinking, well, what is the track record? And and then I opened my program, and I saw 109 flat, and I thought, well, that can't be right. But then I was thinking, well, it is a Preakness. They probably wouldn't put it, you know, and I was just thinking, well, that can be right. And then immediately my first thought, after seeing 109, was the time was wrong. You know, there could be something wrong. I mean, obviously, I don't know. Just watch the race, and, you know, it all just happened so fast. But I thought, okay, well, maybe the time's wrong. You just normally don't see track records go down by, you know, a second, 1.30 seconds. I mean, it was just amazing. And we were in the race before with maybe Wicked, the ski pat. And obviously just ran against Shalon, which is obviously a really nice filly. And I had a little bit of an idea how fast. I think they were 9-3 or something. So I thought, well, you know, for her to run this fast, I thought, maybe the time's not quite right. So it was approached immediately, you know, within hours after the race, saying, hey, they've hand-timed this, and, you know, this time's legit. So it was exciting to hear it stood up.
It was, and everybody upstairs just was astounded, and there's been some pretty remarkable names thrown out when it comes to sprinting fillies and mares that people, you know, Extra Heat was the name that, you know, came to mind for me right away. A 107 buyer, and I felt bad for Mark Reed, whose filly came back and ran a career best and got beat 9 lengths. I she doesn't know. She thinks she won. It is what Mark said. So it shouldn't. It's not going to hurt her psyche. But please flatter me a good second in here. I mean, what do you do? I mean, how has she reacted? How was she Saturday and Sunday morning?
Well, you know, as what I was telling someone Saturday morning, when one runs that fast, you know, you kind of hold your breath till you see him the next day. And she really did look amazing. She was She was full of herself. She recently has become a little difficult to deal with around the stall, which is kind of seems to be the theme with a lot of these good fillies. They don't really like you messing around with them in the stall, and she's become that way. And just aggressive. And she bounced out of it in great shape. We actually shipped her back from Maryland yesterday morning. Actually, I just jogged her on the road here about 20 minutes ago. She looked amazing. Weight's great. She's eating well. So all things are positive with her. I mean, you know, when a horse runs that big, that fast, you do want to space their starts. I think moving forward, really, there's only two things to look at. Would be the victory ride going 6.5 at Belmont, the end of the spring meet there at Belmont. And obviously, the test. I mean, I just don't know if, you know, we're going to go from, you know, obviously Friday straight to the test, or a race in between. But you know, those will be the plans moving forward. And she's a nice filly, and she showed it on Friday.
Unbelievable. Covfefe, for Ellen J. Foxwoods, who had a terrific really a big weekend, give us a thought about Milady Curlin and the other win on Friday. This came in the Laird DuPont.
Yeah, she's just a nice filly. As a tier, we had her, and she had some setbacks, and we gave her plenty. We had to give her time, and we brought her back, and we debuted her, and she was able to win her first few starts, and she kind of hit a bump in the road this winter. We just really couldn't figure out. You know, ran her here at Churchill in the fall, just kind of ran a real flat race. It was a real worst race she's run on paper, and no excuse. We trot her back at the fairgrounds, kind of run the same race, not beat as bad. And we got her back on track at the Oaklawn. We took her up to Oaklawn from the fairgrounds, and she got back on track. We should actually shorten her up, just try something new with her. And, you know, with her pedigree and the way she's made, we've always thought she was a rat horse, but she was, you know, first two starts of her career, she was good enough to win going short. Stretched her back out, and she's done nothing wrong since. I mean, she's just been hitting on all cylinders, and she really tries, and I think she showed that Friday at Pimlico, just how she really had to dig in. Louis Size did a great job. I thought there might be a couple horses that would set in front of her and she could set off of them, but I told Louis, I said, look, you know, ask her to run out there. She can get forward position the right way. I said, you know, you might be able to get the whole way, take them the whole way, and he did. He did a fantastic job, and she really dug in and responded well for him, and very proud of her. And she comes from a good mare. The mare, you know, raced in the Northwest for Mr. Stafford, and he still has her, and she's a homebred. So it was a big update for him and his mare, so it was a huge win.
Well, and that mare, Lady Ledoux, the dam, and I was going to ask about the Sathers, and you know, one of several homebreds from the weekend that ran well and comes away not just with a graded stake win, but also best performance of her career, vaunting her into, you know, mid-90s mm-hmm. on the buyer scale. So feels like, you know, here almost mid-season at four, she's stepping forward.
Yeah, she really is. And she, you know, she's been a filly that, like I said, she's been pretty steady, race a month for the most part since we got her going last summer. So, you know, I think we will definitely give her plenty of time to recover from this one. I don't really, you haven't cracked the stakes book or condition book really to find anything moving forward. Just kind of let her recover from this one. But she's a filly that I do think, you know, there could be even, you know, could be get even better as the year goes on. She's very nice, and like I said, very solid and honest as they come.
Got to get to the Preakness too, but a quick note on Ulele and the Black-Eyed Susan.
Huge race. Joelle did a fantastic job with her, saved every inch of ground. I'll be straight up. I asked Mr. Dobson, I said, you know, it's totally up to you. I'm going to give him all the credit on this one. I was kind of wanting to maybe keep her here in the Midwest and shop for a spot on the turf or the dirt. And he said, you know, he's got the mare. He said, let's take a shot. And, you know, I thought on figures she'd be a couple steps below these, a couple points below these. But, you know, Joelle did a great job. kept her in a good spot down on the inside. And, you know, she showed a lot of fight the last eighth of a mile. I mean, he gave her a great trip, and she was coming back. I mean, she was not going to just lay down. And,
nope.
And for her to get that graded placing was huge for Mr. Dobson and his broodmare band. He obviously has this mare, and she's this filly is very, very nice filly. And, you know, once again, I mean, I don't think we'll jump to the turf, but it's something we've kind of always thought about doing with her, being a Candy Ride. She's out at any given Saturday mare, but kind of thought she might, you know, be able to pick it up on the grass, but she actually picked it up more on the turf the other day than she ever has, so we'll probably stay there for the time being.
Well, looking at Saturday, that wrapped up the Friday action, and looking at Saturday, your first two starters in Triple Crown races, you get a board hit in a classic with Owendale, and the horse that may have run the most courageous race, Warrior's Charge, for him to spin out of that that allowance win on the Fantasy undercard, was there for that stunner, and he absolutely justified inclusion. Talk about your experience with Owendale and Warrior's Charge Saturday.
Well, they both ran exactly like they've been training. They were training lights out, and, you know, Warrior's Charge is just, I mean, just what a horse he is. I mean, he, you know, mount of 16 is probably not his cup of tea, but, you know, it may have been if he could have just, you know, been able to shake loose and maybe just not quite as much speed in the race. He could have been a mile 3/16 horse the other day. So he's, you know, a very, very tough horse. He came back. He looked phenomenal. Both of these colts actually cooled out really quick Saturday evening and looked good yesterday morning when we put them on the van and just inspected them here at Churchill this morning. And both of them come out of in good shape. Both of them, you know, full of energy. Coats are good. Handled everything really well. We'll give them a couple more days to settle in after a long week or weekend and, you know, start plotting out, you know, three-year-old campaign moving forward. So there's a lot of racing left the rest of the year.
You know, a lot of people talking about Owendale's trip. What was your assessment now that you've watched replays probably a couple of times?
Well, you know, he's obviously, you know, he was a horse we kind of questioned how much dirt he would take in his face. And, you know, even though he did take some dirt in his face in the Lexington run on, you still, you know, just because it happens once doesn't mean it'll happen again. He's really growing up mentally. He's really, you know, putting it all together. And I thought that the race was a big effort. As far as the trip goes, Florent came back. He said, look, he said Signalman kind of took his spot or got to the spot he was wanting to get to. So he had to, you know, fan him off the turn and kind of get him out in the middle of the track and maybe lost a little bit of momentum there. But, you know, and you know, really, if he does stay to the inside or is able to get to the inside, you know, maybe Everfast is not getting the trip he's getting. Obviously, Will Award at that point was in front of us. So, you know, look, in a perfect world, you know, a perfect trip. He could have probably been second, maybe a little bit closer to War Wheel. But overall, Florent does a great job for us. He's part of our team, and that's not going to change. And he's a fantastic jock. And overall, you know, I thought the horse was probably the second best horse in the race, and he ran well, and I'm very proud of it.
Absolutely, and of course, for the 10-strike team, some of them may still be in the infield, actually, 2 days later. They still may not have left. They had such fun, and the afterglow will continue, and all the things that you did for Marshall and his team clearly going to pay dividends long term, and both those horses with big opportunities as the three-year-old season continues. Brad Cox, well done. Congratulations. We will see you in New York.
Sounds good. See you soon.
I appreciate it. Brad Cox Racing on Twitter, everybody. And there you go. Day one of the Preakness Weekend recap. Tons more to do tomorrow. Andy Serling and John White among the regular side of things. And then when we look to the rest of the list, I want to get Jose Camejo because that team, you know, for Ms. Evelyn, that won the very one, Wild About Star, the Louisiana bred, they were going berserk. Roger Atfield maybe tomorrow, Graham Motion, who else? Jonathan Thomas, we got to get Jonathan in here. plenty to do. So make sure you're here, 9 o'clock. If you missed anything, replay 6 to 9 tomorrow here on SiriusXM. Visit the website later for archive and podcast. I want to thank Deja. And, of course, Jalan was on earlier on the board. And Casey trying to get better in the hospital. Talk to you tomorrow.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio. When you grow up, live it like a good boy.